School District Board of Trustees. The board met previously in closed session. We discussed several items of anticipated litigation. It was discussion only and no direction was given. Do we have consensus on the order of business? Apparently we do, so we'll move to approval of the minutes.
Move to approve.
Second. Moved by Dr. Olker, seconded by myself. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes unanimously. The next is a presentation. And we welcome Paula Lowe from the Teach Foundation.
Good evening, everyone. I believe the board has received a press release from the Teach Foundation announcing our 16 grant winners for the fall 2005 mini-grant cycle. And with great pride, I'm able to say that we funded 100% of our grant applications this year. And of course, it's not possible to fund 100% if you don't have 100% wonderful teachers who are submitting grants. It's very exciting and it's very delightful to know that we have such high-quality teachers with such exciting ideas who are both coming up with new things to do and
dollars. Marilyn, your treat after the meeting tonight.
I guess so.
And next, I would like to introduce our grant winners because it's our honor to have them present with us tonight.
Nice.
From Morro Bay High School, we have Steve Gady. And he has a grant for $1,000 to get started on biodiesel production. He'll have 250 ninth grade through 12th grade students taking vegetable oil from local restaurants and converting it into biodiesel fuel for school and district vehicles. We also have from Morro Bay High School a $1,000 grant to English teacher Daniel Freeman. He has the Morro Bay High School Writing Project. This is something Teach loves to do, which is to fund multi-year projects where a teacher is truly developing a new feature at their school, a new legacy of learning at their school. And Dan, last year we funded him to take students to the UCLA Writers Conference, Young Writers Conference, and this year those students are helping to set up a school writers club into a small society of writers who will publish a literary journal of student work twice a year. Mm-hmm. Next up, so you can see, this is an exciting class for students who are looking for Central Coast compatible careers, and certainly the floral industry is one of our strong things in this county, so we really are excited to have our kids get a handle on flowers. At San Luis Obispo High School, $1,000 to physics teacher Mike Hayala, robots at San Luis High School. He'll have, Mike is working on infusing robotics into the physics curriculum, and he'll have an opportunity for 175 physics students to build robots and learn about engineering and robotics. Also at San Luis Obispo High School, we have $1,000 for librarian Melissa Murtigal's information literacy curriculum web pages. This is the first phase in a grant, series of grants, I bet, in developing research portals on the library webpage that'll benefit the entire school. And those of you, if you go to the high school's webpages and you go to the library, which is what I did to learn what Melissa's doing, you find out that that's where the kids go to do their research and access various educational support through the county offices and other places. So that's pretty exciting, too. We have $1,000 also going to a grant at San Luis Obispo High School for computer science teacher and technology club advisor Jan Fechos. VEX Robotics Competition. This is 30 students will build robots to compete in a challenge.
Teachers are here.
Yes.
Would it be okay to have them stand up so we see who's doing, you know, all these different things, or real quick, or is that
would be great.
Can we just run by from the start real quick?
Okay. First teacher. Steve. Yay. Daniel Freeman. Fiala Chapman. Mike Ayala. Melissa Mertigal. Jan Fecho. Jan might be sick. Let's see. Now, we're caught up, but Daniel Kirk, who is our next recipient, is actually... Daniel, are you here? No. Daniel is teaching, at Cal Poly tonight. He teaches a writing class on Tuesday and Thursday nights, which I find very exciting to know that one of our high school teachers is not only teaching all day long, but is continuing to inspire and teach at night. Wow. The first grant at $470 for a Pacific Beach High School teacher, Daniel Kirk, is for enhancing the drama experience. 22 students will study the script and elements of Our Town and attend a PCPA production of this play. Now, this is the fourth year, I think, we've supported Daniel in this type of work, and it's really, really dynamic. And at Teach, we think it's really important for us to support Pacific Beach because they don't have parents all clamoring to give them extra money. So it's real important to have a Teach Foundation. It really is important. For those of us who've worked in alternative ed, we know that we've got quite a collection of students to motivate. And one of the things that Teresa told us last year, she said we were able to have artist Dixie Cavigli teach a six-week watercolor class to our students. Many students' attendance issues cleared up during this course, and they never missed a session. I think that that's an exciting testimony to the things that we can do above and beyond. Let's move on to Bishop's Peak. Yes? Oh, did I skip Melissa? How could I do that? Did I do that? Yes, I did, and I've got your T-shirt. Oh, my gosh. Pacific Beach High School, $600 for Melissa Newman's mock trial. Yay. She has 20 students that will be competing in the San Luis Obispo County mock trial competition, and we're, again, glad to support her doing that. At Bishop's Peak Elementary, how did you come up with this? $999 for special education, Monica Stanks, Read Naturally program. Monica works with students who have learning disabilities, health impairments, autism, and she knows how to make these materials work for those students. At Del Mar, we have Jenny Phipps, Handwriting Without Tears. $338 for her to work with first grade students. And at Del Mar, we also, now here is a bold teacher, for something called Bold Recess Club. She's going to have students be introduced to ballroom movement dances with the help of the civic ballet dancers. Now that's a good way to use $200. To get kids thinking they're having fun, getting exercise. Her second grant for $859 is for fourth grade science materials to get 70 students hands-on science materials that she'll be able to use for years and years. Next teacher is Elaine Hill, and Elaine is now at Hawthorne. Yay! Now, here's another interesting story. Last year, we funded Elaine with her yoga materials when she was at Bishop's Peak. But Bishop's Peak got so excited about the yoga materials, they wanted to keep them. So we told Elaine, go ahead, we like that. We're excited about kids using yoga. We think it's a real compliment to education. So we said, submit another grant. We're pretty sure we can give you a nod, and we did. So she's getting a grant for $445 to pay for new materials. At Hawthorne Elementary, we've got Kimberly Dimbat and Terry Wright, and they've got a project. Their project is PC to TV converters for classrooms to assure teacher access to educational technology center portal in classrooms serving over 200 teachers. For $800, we can do a lot at that school. Next grant is for Dana Fiores at Sinsheimer, $968 for assessing science to let people know what the Teach Foundation does, how it can support teachers, and to help us build up the endowment so we have that enduring chunk of money working for the kids in our community. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Might I ask, just take a moment while Paula is still here to send our profound thanks from the school district to the Teach Foundation, not just for the wonderful grants tonight, and they are amazing, but for the work that the Teach Foundation does year-round. Last Thursday night, I think it was, a wonderful event at the Embassy Suites called Cooking for Kids that raised lots and lots of money, and people had a great time in the course of doing that. We were able to display student artwork, the jazz band from Morro Bay High School, and just an opportunity to celebrate schools and at the same time have experienced wonderful community support. So I'd like to publicly thank Paula and thank the Teach Foundation as well.
Okay, the next item is correspondence. At the time the agenda was prepared, no correspondence had been received. Public comment. Have we received any requests to address the board? Are there any members of the public present who would like to address the board? Mr. Evans.
I will speak. Somebody was saying there was a void to be filled, and I thought, well, I'll go ahead. If you look behind you, we had a wonderful addition to our auditorium, our gym here, with all that lighting, thanks to any number of members of our community and construction people that have done that. So we have now advanced sound system and lighting system that we have been. So we're looking forward to using that in student productions this year. There. Your void is filled.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to address the board? Anyone considering pursuing appointment to the board who would like to address the board? Okay, then we'll move on. Reports by school staff and student representatives. Jenny?
Hi, my name's Shaney Butcher, and I'm from San Luis Obispo High School. So really successful. It was last Wednesday. We had 50 students and 50 teachers attend, and we had an awesome breakfast, thanks to our pancake flipper, Mr. Jones. Also, high school exit exam makeups are today and tomorrow for 11th and 12th graders. Fall sports are coming to an end, and we're really proud of our girls' tennis team, who won Pac-5 League champions. Girls' volleyball plays AG this week on Thursday in the new gym, and that is for Pac-5 League champs, so we wish them the best of luck. And we welcome everyone to come out and help cheer for them. Boys cross country won county championships, and they're favored to win league, which is on Thursday, so good luck to all of them. Drama Club is performing Dracula, and shows will continue through this weekend. This week, our sister school, who we have been in contact with for over 50 years from Germany, is visiting. It's the Eberhard Ludwig School. It's their orchestra, and they will be accompanying our choir on Thursday. We're having an assembly at 12:45 in the new gym, and everyone's welcome to come. They will also be performing on Sunday at the PAC at 3 o'clock, and it's $10. Let's see. SATs are at Cuesta this Saturday, November 5th. Staff Development Day is on November 10th, and students have the 10th and 11th off for Veterans Day observance. So we'll have a four-day weekend, so that's exciting. Band for a trade fair. So that's what's going on.
Thank you. Sage Stein from Morbay. Mrs. Dickinson.
You do such a great job, Shani. I think every school should never tear down their old gym, because they can always refer to the new gym, even if it's like 30 years old or whatever now.
I guess that's true.
I mean, that's just a great tradition.
Yeah. Sage Stein from Morro Bay High School.
Hey, guys. My name is Sage Stein. I'm from Morro Bay High School, as you probably know. And I'm filling in for Lindsay Ayotte, who would not be able to attend the meeting tonight. First of all, I'd like to thank the Teach Foundation for the grants on behalf of our teachers at Morro Bay High School. And I'm going to go ahead and talk about our homecoming week, which was 2 weeks ago. The whole week was very successful overall. I've heard good things all around. We played Cabrillo, and we won 31-10, and that was pretty cool. And at the pregame, we had the dance team perform along with the cheerleaders. And at the halftime, our king and queen was announced along with the floats. Our king was Shane Wilwand, and our queen was Lindsay Ayotte. And we also, on the previous day, we had our car bash and bonfire, which was just a basic spirit-raising activity. And on that Saturday, we had our dance, our homecoming dance, of which was very successful, noting that we didn't even have a homecoming dance last year. And we had about 300 people, which is comparable almost to the prom. So that was very successful. And on the last Friday, we had our Pirates Breakfast Club, and that went pretty well. And our next one is on December 15th, and I'm at liberty to say that all of you are welcome to that, and hope to see you there. Last week was Red Ribbon Week, and that was our anti-drug pledges. We did a few things during the quad involving the Red Ribbons, and overall, I think we had a lot of people sign up for that, which was a pretty big success. And on yesterday, Halloween, we got our Halloween costume contest with five categories: the scariest, the funniest, the most original, and the most glamorous. And I thought a few of those costumes were very, very hilarious, including Ernest Pierce and Parker Hayes, who Ernest was the guy from Dodgeball, if any of you've seen that movie. But anyway, it was hilarious. And Parker, well, I'm not going to talk about that one, but anyway, today, November 1st, was our exit exam retakes, and that was for 11th and 12th graders. And tomorrow, we're also going to have that as well. On the 4th, we have our birthday club, which is for those of who have birthdays in October. And we get them in the room and we give them a few cakes and sing them a happy birthday song. So, yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. And on the 28th, we have our winter sports expectation meeting, which is basically the coaches and athletes all come together and they state their expectations for the winter sports, and that includes boys and girls soccer, boys and girls basketball, wrestling, and water polo. So that's available to all, so you're all welcome to come. And we haven't really decided, but on November 30th, we might have the November 30th family bingo night. And that's an old tradition that we're reawakening this year, and everyone's welcome. And looking a little more into the future, we got December 17th, our winter formal, which is at the community center from 8 to 11:30 p.m. And on the 22nd of November, we have the Area D Leadership Conference at Napomo High School for our ASB class. And that's going to just to develop leadership skills and give them some ideas for ASB in our year. And lastly, this month, on the 29th, we had our Hobie Clue meeting, which was a mini leadership meeting, just for anyone who wanted to come. So that's basically it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. As always, you are welcome to stay and enjoy the meeting, participate in the meeting, or if you have other things that call you away, we understand. We thank you for joining us. Mr. Miller, status of the state budget.
Thank you. Just to review where the essential initiatives stand before the election next week, reminding everybody that November 8th is the date of the special election, and it's very important to get out and vote on these. The Public Policy Institute of California did a poll on October 28th, which was reflective of the same agency's poll in August. And what it revealed is that the voters are... There are none of the four propositions for which provides any majority support. Proposition 74, which deals with teacher tenure, has a 46% approval rating. And Proposition 75, which deals with union dues, has a 46% approval rating. Proposition 76, which is the attempt to alter Proposition 98 and the way that state is financing its legislative actions, it's got only a 30% approval rating, and Proposition 77, which deals with redistricting, has a 36% approval rating. When the survey respondents were also asked about the special election in general, as well as the governor's performance, the answers were negative at best. 54% of the likely voters do not approve of the special election, and only 33% of the respondents approve of the governor's performance. 58% disapprove strongly. But the legislature even polls worse than that. The legislature polls 21% approval and 65% disapproval of their actions. So we find that our governor and legislature are in great disfavor with the people of California. Just to remind you one more time, November 8th is the election. It's very important to get out and cast your vote.
Thank you. Item 3, status of athletic programs and Title IX compliance. Mr. Robinette.
Thank you. Good evening. At the board's request, I'd like to give you an update regarding our high school athletic program, specifically as it relates to Title IX compliance. Title IX is a federal law that encompasses a lot of things, but as it relates to athletics, it requires individual schools to offer male and females equal opportunities to play sports. to be treated fairly in the arena of athletics, and for colleges, which doesn't apply to us, to share fair amounts of scholarship money, which is where most of the Title IX litigation happens, is in colleges dealing with scholarship issues. Our school district went through a coordinated compliance review last year, and you had results of that shared with you in the spring, and was found to be compliant in all areas of educational equity, including Title IX compliance with athletics. Furthermore, as the board is aware, last year, about this time last year, it was decided to add a junior varsity girls soccer program to both of our high schools to be responsive to female athletes' interests, which is one of the requirements of Title IX. Also, for the 2005-2006 school year, the current school year, the board added additional football coaching stipends that would bring us more in line with the number of stipends being offered in school districts in our area, and also created a new athletic offering altogether, which was our girls' golf program, and at both of our comprehensive high schools. And our first year of girls' golf has had 12 participants at Morro Bay High School and 10 participants at San Luis Obispo High School, and has been they're on their way to a successful season, and it's a good start to adding a new program for girls in our school district. One of the tests of Title IX compliance is to strive to have participation rates equal to the overall gender distribution of the school. That's kind of the first prong of Title IX, a very difficult one to achieve, I might add, but that's kind of the first test. If you have equal numbers of girls and boys participating, that is consistent with the actual distribution of the population at the school. They're kind of simplistic charts, but I'll demonstrate or show you anyway where we ended up last year in 2004-2005. San Luis Obispo High School, roughly 50-50 boys and girls, 51% of the population, overall school population female, 49% male, and the participation rates, the actual students participating in athletics, 42% female, 58% male. So you can see that they're, you know, that the ideal would be to have it even across the board, that if there's 51% females, that 51% of the participants in sports would be female. So there's a slight discrepancy there. Morro Bay High School, you'll see a similar discrepancy. It's actually interesting. They had 60 more boys at Morro Bay High School than they did girls last year. So 53% of the population at Morro Bay was male, 47% female. And the participation rates, again, a smaller discrepancy, but you see that they're not exactly even. That's probably to be expected. Ideally, the goal of Title IX is to have participation rates equal the population distribution. But we know that high school football, technically a co-ed sport, is definitely a male-dominated sport, and it has no equivalent female-dominated sport that would boost up those numbers. And so the second and third prong of Title IX comes into play, which is the school, the individual school in the district, showing a history of expanding programs for the underrepresented group? And I think, obviously, by adding a girls' golf program, by the board's actions last year, we are demonstrating that history. And the third prong are we making sure that we are being responsive to the underrepresented group's interests by surveying, by making sure we're listening to the needs of the students to try to bring those numbers up. And again, our schools seem to be, at least in the recent history, having a history of expanding and showing our interest to the girls' program. Another aspect of Title IX is to make sure that equal treatment is accorded male and female athletes within the athletic program. Our high schools this fall completed a Title IX self-audit, which they will complete every fall. And I brought a couple sample pages just to show you what that self-audit would look like. Probably difficult to read from there, but the idea is for the schools to kind of go through, look at all the aspects of their athletic program, beginning with the participation rates. Have they had a history of expanding sports? Are they having some method of soliciting interest? And then various questions like, are the budgets equitable? Are uniforms and equipment paid for the same way for male and female sports? I think I brought the last page. Some of the other types of questions. Replacement schedules for equipment and uniforms, number of competitive events being equal, for example, in baseball and softball, locker room facilities of equivalent quality and size, condition of playing fields, athletic trainers being provided to both sports. These are areas for the schools to kind of say yes or no, and if there's a no, it doesn't mean that we're, you know, way out of Title IX compliance. It means it gives us an opportunity to be proactive, take some corrective action, look at our procedures, and make some adjustments if necessary. So they'll be doing this every fall, turning this into me, and then we can kind of go through an evaluation of that. Twice yearly, I now conduct a district athletic advisory committee, which is composed of principals, coaches, athletic directors, parents, and students to look at district-wide athletic issues. And get the pulse of the community with regard to sports interest and receive input that can be shared with the superintendent and then filtered to the board as appropriate. So our next meeting is actually a week from today, next Tuesday, November 8th, of the District Athletic Advisory Committee. As far as other issues, probably the largest front-burning issue in terms of high school athletics at this time will be coaching certification. Passed last May, the CIF, the California Interscholastic Federation, has instituted a requirement for all coaches in CIF-sanctioned activities, which would affect our high school programs, to have high school coaches that are certified by CIF / NFHS, National Federation of High Schools. This program, which would consist of classroom instruction focusing on all aspects of coaching, communication skills, sportsmanship, physical training, first aid, managing risk, performance-enhancing substance prohibition education, etc. All those aspects will be covered in this coursework. It'll take approximately 8 to 9 hours to complete, and it'll be followed by an examination and will result in a national certification. All coaches will be required to do this, and this will be required of all coaches beginning January 1st, 2009. So we have some time, about 3 years before this requirement takes effect, and we'll be putting together our plan for certification, and we'll most likely take on a trainer of trainer models. We'll send two or three employees to get the training on how to certify coaches, and then we'll offer the coursework through our district. There are some other avenues, and we'll need to explore the costs and the best way to offer it, but that seems to be the protocol that would make the most sense right now, is to offer the training ourselves in district for all of our coaches and prospective coaches.
Excuse me, Rick?
Yes.
Is that just head coaches, or would that apply also to assistant coaches who don't receive a stipend?
All coaches, including volunteer coaches, would have to be certified in order to work with students.
Thank you.
If I may say, I think all coaches, but especially perhaps walk-on volunteer coaches, need this kind of training to assure that our kids are receiving the best parent and coaching contact they can possibly have.
Yeah, we'll certainly be coming to the board with the proposal for the new requirements and be happy to share the curriculum with you. It's really excellent, actually. I've looked at the curriculum. The textbook that's being used is Successful Coaching by Rainer Martens. It's kind of the Bible of coaching. It goes into a lot of just the kind of information you want coaches to have on sportsmanship and losing gracefully and winning gracefully and safety and prohibitions against performance-enhancing substances and all that kind of stuff you want to see coaches trained in and working with students. So there's a lot of bureaucratic things we have to do. I think this is one that's handed down that is probably going to be of great benefit. It's a requirement, and it'll take some time and effort and challenge for us, but I think the results will be really positive. I'm available to answer any of the questions the board may have, and both of our high school principals are here in case there's any other questions that they might have to offer. But any other information you'd like, I'm certainly able to provide.
Mrs. Botwin? Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question, too, actually. On the survey, Rick, that you passed out with the students, have you had any unusual results? Have you done the survey already? Has it been passed
out? The Title IX self-audit?
Right.
Yes, we have.
Did you have any unusual results on the survey questions that you...
No.
They came out as what you expected mm-hmm. they would be. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I missed, you said about 50-50 male and female at San Luis, give or take a few, is 42% are females and involved in the sports, 48% are males, is that correct? It is, because it's what I wrote down is what you said. So don't change it now.
Did I trust you?
Don't change it now. What was the percentage? I didn't catch it for Morro Bay.
Let me show them up here so everyone can have the benefit.
Thank you.
Let's see if I can get them both on the page. So again, the first column is showing the overall population of the school. This is 2004-2005 figures. I mean, we can do a fall count, but it's better to kind of look at the whole year and see what students are actually sticking with programs. So this is last year's numbers. So the first column in each one is the population of the school, the gender diversity in the school, which ideally is about 50-50, and it's pretty close, but it's kind of interesting at Morro Bay. There were, out of 900 students, about 60 more boys than girls last year. And then, of course, the ideal for Title IX.
I would blame that on the Los Osos sewer myself.
The ideal that we're striving for, that again may never be realized and might be impossible to realize, is to get that distribution to be equal in participation in sports also. Doesn't happen very many places. Northwestern University is one of the colleges that is able to boast that they actually have an equal number of female and male participants in their sports programs, but most colleges can't do it because of football. Most high schools are not able to do it. So the second and third prong of Title IX, which is being responsive, expanding programs, making sure we're meeting interest, and making sure that within the athletic arena we're treating male and female athletes equally, is a major goal. But those are the numbers, Carolyn.
No, you didn't give me the percentage, and I can't see it from here. What's the percentage participation rates, male and female, at Morro Bay?
At Morro Bay, 42%. No, I'm sorry. At Morro Bay, 43% female, 57% male.
Thank you.
It's a distribution.
Warren. Thank you. I have a number of questions. Where are we as far as staff's understanding, and I use that in a broad sense, of both the requirements of Title IX, handling of complaints that may come to attention of staff? Have we taken any in-service steps? Do you feel that we need to, or is there a fundamental understanding among staff that we're committed to Title IX, and when complaints come to us, we want to respond respectfully and effectively?
Yeah, I think there's a heightened awareness. You know, ultimately, the schools themselves are individually responsible, and both of our principals are, Title IX is high on the radar screen, and in terms of monitoring their athletic program, their athletic directors, I think it's a pretty high priority right now.
Good. And also, along the same lines, do we have a good understanding among our booster clubs and support volunteer support organizations that there is the requirement that we expend donated funds in accordance with the requirements of Title IX?
It's one of the questions we ask in the audit to kind of look at that funding. The response I got back was yes. I don't know if the high school principals want to comment to that, but my assumption is that's the case.
How about from the Athletic Advisory Committee? Is anything percolating up among that group one way or another?
We'll see. I mean, we have our meeting next Tuesday, we have an open agenda. And so any other items that come through, we'll definitely find out. But I have not heard anything with regard to Title IX.
Here's my concern, and it derives a little bit from the previous issue related to girls' soccer, and that is that we have really dedicated parents and support for our athletic programs among our booster clubs in Black and Gold and Gridiron. My concern is that the requirements are understood so that the folks who work so hard supporting these athletic programs don't feel underappreciated, and that's my big concern. My first concern is that we are in compliance with Title IX and that we're supporting equal opportunities for athletics for our students, but along the same lines, these folks just put out way too much effort in support for our kids, that we want to make sure that they understand why we do things and why these requirements are what they are. I guess that was more along the lines of a speech than a question, but you handled it very well. Can you, Rick, how many meetings has the Athletic Advisory Committee had? Generally, what kinds of things have come up?
I'm actually planning on only having 2 meetings a year, unless there's some direction to do more. Kind of planning a November, April timeline. The schools themselves have athletic booster meetings that meet on a monthly basis and have the opportunities to have individual issues. I think the purpose of the District Athletic Advisory Committee is one, to kind of meet a couple times, make sure that if there are issues percolating out there that maybe have or haven't been addressed at the school site, we at the district are hearing about them. We're hearing about them in an open forum with parents and students involved in that, and so that they can be brought forward. Kind of strategize in November and April, twice a year format, although certainly open to more often, so that we can kind of meet once the school year has been going, see what types of issues are out there, see what types of interests are out there, but then also meeting in the spring to coincide with the budget process and strategic planning process in case, we have a need to make cuts or add programs or add sports that we're not doing it out of line with the process that we would need to bring to the board.
And just finally, I want to say I'm very glad to see that the certification coaches is moving forward, particularly in the area of supplements and performance-enhancing drugs. And I just want to acknowledge, again, Chris Unger's leadership on this issue from a couple of years ago, actually. And I was astounded in an article I read in a national publication, nothing to do with our district, that the primary source of supplements and performance-enhancing drugs for secondary students is from coaches and volunteer folks. So I think it's good that we're on top of this, and I appreciate the presentation.
Mrs. Dickinson.
Athletics, is that only competitive athletics, or does Title IX recognize athletics in a broader sense of physical activity and that type of thing? And what I'm thinking of is how to have girls be more involved in these kind of things and ongoing expanding programs. Do the high schools have dance companies, and could that be a part of an athletic program for girls that would count?
Let me see. I can take those questions apart. First of all, Title IX is part of the 1972 educational amendments. It's been around 30-something years, and it applies to all aspects of educational equity. So this is a really narrow focus, athletics. Mm-hmm. Title IX was the stuff that brought in co-ed right. PE. And Title IX brought it, part of the whole purpose was to make sure there was equity in education, but get more girls involved in math and science and stop the division that was happening in schools. So the answer to your first question is yes, Title IX is far broader than the issue of athletics. Extracurricular programs, our high school, and they would speak better about them, have all kinds of extracurricular programs. I know Morro Bay has a dance club. I don't know if Slo High does or not. I think so. And there is a distinction between club sports or intramurals or extracurricular activities and CIF-sanctioned activities, which have to be sanctioned by CIF. And I'm not sure there is any dance competition sanctioned by CIF. There might be, but it's certainly not something that there is any, league in our area that's competing in that. I'm not aware of that as a competitive activity. But Title IX would apply to all those areas.
Mr. Unger.
Thanks, Rick. Just one final question. How do you choose who's on the Athletic Advisory Committee, and how do we assure that there's representation from across the board in both male and female sports? And, I don't think there are any co-ed sports. Perhaps there are. But how are we assuring that so that people's voices are being heard?
It's an ad hoc committee. I've asked the principals to submit names of people that are involved and seem to have an interest, made sure to include individuals that have come in front of the board with interests. Those people have been invited to be part of it, made sure that we have coaches representing both boys and girls sports, and actually been kind of careful about selecting that to make sure we have equal representation in terms of coaches, the athletic directors and principals, and students at each of the school. I think the principals have chosen students who are athletes or who are athletic commissioners at the school, and hopefully it's a representative body. It's certainly an open group. I haven't, you know, sought some way of advertising it, but it's not a closed group by any way. It's strictly an ad hoc committee that I've tried to have a broad representation.
Okay, last question, I guess. Rick, you mentioned that you, I thought I understood you to mention, that you surveyed underrepresented groups, which would be girls, to determine interests. Did I dream that?
No, you didn't dream that, but I didn't survey, and that's a high school responsibility to make sure that there is some process in place to make sure that student interest is being focused on. So whether it's a yearly survey that's given to middle schools and high schools to find out if there's interest in sports. I mean, it's kind of how the girls' golf thing came about. We had some parents interested, some students interested, asked for sign-ups to see if there actually could be a team. And so, you know, it came about, but that's a... That's a site responsibility under Title IX to make sure that if there is an underrepresentation, which obviously there is, that there's some way of addressing that need to expand programs or take away from programs, which is not what we want to do, but some way of equalizing that.
So since we have Mr. Jones here tonight and we have Mr. Zotovich here tonight, and I don't know if they've had an opportunity to survey or would like to speak to it, I just would be interested to know what kind of interests came forward from that process. Something that we're not doing that girls are expressing an interest in.
Since the addition of the girls' golf team and the addition of the girls' freshman soccer team, there has not been a request for any additional teams to be added. The girls' golf team was the most recent addition. They started competition this year. And as far as a formal survey of all the girls at the high school, we haven't conducted a formal survey at this point. We have each year when the students register for their classes, we get input from the students that are coming in from Laguna prior to them coming in, the sports they're interested in, but we haven't done a specific interest survey on adding additional sports at this point. Right now, we have a kind of equal distribution of sports, male and female. And at the moment, there hasn't been any request for anything new.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Jones. Mr. Zotovich.
I concur exactly with what Mr. Jones just said.
Just like he said, I agree.
I agree.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Robinette. Item 4 is approval of board goals.
I move the recommendation.
Those in favor? Aye. Oh.
You're pulling an ochre.
Is there anyone, any member of the public who would like to comment on the board goals as revised? Okay. Mrs. Botwin.
Yeah, I have a question about it, and I read them over in last time. I was, after we made the changes, I was very content. But I was looking at them over this afternoon, and if you'll look at page 4.2, I would just like a clarification of something. At the bottom, it says governance, no change. Okay, the last sentence of that, it says, which embraces the values of our community, a system for making decisions, which includes the best thinking of the organization and the community, and a method of oversight and accountability for the organization. And I looked at that, and I thought, I would like that to be defined, a method of oversight, what kind of oversight, what kind of accountability for the organization, for what organization, and by whom. And I thought, I didn't know those, and I should have asked them last time, and I apologize for that. But the fact that they were there and it bothered me, I'm asking this time.
If I might,
Mr. Unger?
One thing, certainly, when we talk about oversight and accountability of the organization, I think what we're talking about is the school board's role for oversight and accountability. Ultimately, those are the things that we're responsible for. And
And I think we're all comfortable with that, and perhaps we'll be seeing other ways that we will be able to hear about the activities of the school district so that we can further those goals.
Dr. Valentine.
Sorry, may I ask, Chris, you're saying then a method of oversight and accountability for the organization referring back strictly to the Board of Education.
Well, I think ultimately my feeling is the Board of Education, without stealing Dr. Valentine's thunder perhaps, is that we're the ultimate overseers and accountability-ors of the school district. And ultimately, our oversight and accountability is to that of the voters of the school district and the children of the district.
Dr. Valentine.
Yeah, I agree. The Board of Education is who this goal is targeted to in terms of governance, because you are the governance of the school district. The accountability that comes to you through the forum that you're looking at now and through other communications, but largely through the forum that you have now. We report each year on the student achievement of all of our students. Tonight we have an item in which you're going to be asked to approve the basic goals of the school improvement plans of the school district. Issues that are of interest to the board, such as the report that Mr. Robinette made tonight, are issues that are brought before the board for you to provide input and reaction to. Ultimately, you have an employee, which is the superintendent of the school district, with whom you sit down and establish goals and evaluation criteria for the school district and hold that individual accountable.
Mrs. Andreen.
Thank you. I was going to say quite a bit of the same that you did, and just point out that the verb is to develop, so it can be somewhat fluid, just as we responded to the need with Title IX by having that group come together and give us information so that we can exercise our function of oversight. That might happen from time to time, depending on what the issues are. There's the superintendent's advisory, there's this group, and I think from time to time, various groups will advise us so that we can fulfill that duty, but it's fluid.
Mrs. Dickinson.
Since we're talking about the governance one and clarifying things, this is back to the values issue. I know we changed the one in the community confidence goal, so we didn't want to hit that too hard. But when it says to develop an operational set of policies and procedures which embrace the values of our community, would you mind clarifying for me, you know, what the values are that we're talking about and how those are determined? Or are we just going to understand that we all share them and kind of vague and that's okay with everyone? Or?
Well, I think the concept there of governance is that the Board of Education is elected to the positions which brought you to the board, and that the community affirmed by electing you.
Okay, then we have, I believe, Dr. Olker moved to approve. Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Millar moved and Dr. Olker seconded. Am I at the same meeting?
No. We don't need him.
Okay, so moved by Walter, seconded by Chris. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
He's a lame duck.
So that passes. Item 5 is proposed revisions to Board Policy 5141.33, head lice, first reading.
Yes.
Jackie Kurt-Martinez.
On behalf of Jackie Kurt-Martinez, yes. I'd like to present it, Madam Chairman. We would like to recommend the board policy regarding head lice be expanded to include language describing action that will be taken in the event that head lice are discovered at school. If you look at the attachment, you see the underlined section, which further clarifies for staff what procedures we should follow. So we ask for your input and at this time.
Looks good to me.
Me too, Madam Chair.
I don't think we should scratch anything from this one.
Mary, how many cases have we had handed policy in place for them?
Well, this, it, as you can see, it allows us to take our steps, and they're spelled out for us, so they aren't wouldn't be questioned.
I have seen those babies leap, and they are athletic, let me tell you.
My kids both got them. Did your daughter avoid them?
I got them, too, and I'll tell you, it's no laughing matter. They kept circulating through my daughter's elementary school class, and then I had a birthday party, and I was assured that none of the kids had them wrong. So I think this is a wonderful policy, and, you know, my hat's off to whoever has worked on this.
Mr. Millar.
I live in a fraternity house, and I may have head lice now. But I agree with Mr. Unger. There's no need to nitpick this policy, and I would direct staff.
And Madam Chair, if I may.
Dr. Matakovich, this will be then brought back at the next meeting.
Thank you.
Okay.
The idea when it talks about the gamut recommendations for the policy, I think that's referring to CSBA, the CSBA gamut who recommends the policy as well. So this has passed that kind of muster.
Okay. Then we move on to the action consent agenda. Please let me know if you would like any item to be pulled. Item 6, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. I'd like to pull that. 7, acceptance of donations. 9, disposition of surplus property. Oh, beg your pardon. 9, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 10, approval of purchase orders. 11, approval of warrants and payroll. 12, approval of case. Okay, Mr. Robinette, hi. I just had two things kind of jumped out at me as I looked at these, and I'm sure there are very simple explanations for them. Under classified change of status or assignment, there is one employee moving from a custodian 1 to a custodian 3 position, and I'm wondering, do we have a custodian 2, or why the jump?
Yes, we have a custodian 2. It's actually, these positions are defined by the function and whether or not they're in a being supervised or working independently. So we have custodian 1, 2, 3, senior custodian. This is a promotional position for this individual.
Okay. And then under certificated change of status or assignment, we have an EL teacher who's going from halftime at Hawthorne and halftime at Smith to quarter time. And then eighth time. Anyway, this teacher will be moving between 4 different school sites. Well, if you consider Bishop's Peak and Teach to be one school site, they are separate schools, but sited at the same location. I'm wondering how feasible is it for a person to be moving around and be effective when they're teaching halftime, quarter time, and then 2 eighth times.
Yeah. These are itinerant EL positions. It's an itinerant EL teacher. And it's actually, this is a change of assignment based on a reorganization of our existing EL services. Large schools have much smaller populations of EL students. So essentially, this teacher is spending, you know, half day here, half day there. And you know, plugging the holes as best we can using the, I think it's 3.5 EL itinerant teachers that we have in the district. So it's a reorganization. It's not, that has been the allocation those schools have had. We've just shifted staff to accommodate it better.
On the same yes. thing. But Rick, mm-hmm. This teacher, Jennifer, is going to 4 different schools in one day. Is that correct?
No. This is a this is an FTE assignment, so her full-time equivalent is a full-time teacher split between 4 sites. And so essentially half of her day every day is at CL Smith. the rest of the of her assignment is split between the three other schools in some capacity, according to the. So it's not four schools a day. It might be Monday at Bishop's Peak and Tuesday at Sinsheimer. So it's an itinerant position, but it's not traveling four schools a day.
Nice.
The bulk of the assignment is a half-time assignment at Smith and then itinerant at the other schools.
Thanks for explaining it. I see now how it's possible. I was trying to envision someone racing around town
sure.
to try to accomplish their goals in a given day, and it seemed
a lot of drive
to
time
me.
There. We're trying to avoid that. So
absolutely.
This is itinerant at different days.
Okay, thank you very much. Then I move to approve item 6.
Second.
Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Item 12 was pulled by...
The NCLB compliance were in the number of students in the subgroups taking the different accountability measures. And I was wondering why that wasn't mentioned in these or if that's just assumed as a district-wide goal.
That goal was actually met last year, and so that was a goal before. And so okay. what we're in NCLB compliance this year is the subgroup of EL learners. And so that's a focus that a lot of schools have taken in terms of focusing on all students and their learning.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Millar.
Thank you. I don't have any comment on any specific plans. I just, having been through this process at C.L. Smith a couple of times, I think, I just want to acknowledge the amount of time and effort that staff, teachers, classified, administration, parent volunteers put into this process. And I remember at times just being numb from coming out of these meetings and doing these things, but it really is where the rubber meets the road. And it's how we adjust our delivery of education to our students at our sites and how we respond to various needs. And it's a terrific service that a lot of people provide for the district. And every time I see these compilations, I always feel what they went through to get here, and I wanted to acknowledge it.
Mrs. Baum.
Thank you. I just wanted to compliment the school site council for the extra time and energy. And one or two of the schools talk about parents and so on and so forth. Is it, in the term staff, are all the administration of that school site included in the term staff? When normally I look at the word staff, I think just the faculty.
All people are involved in that process.
Okay, because I was looking particularly in Morrilby High. Goal number one was fine. It's a staff will, and then they were the goal was something the staff would be doing. And goal two was all students. And then I got to goal three, and I thought, whoa, staff will. And then it has a bunch of different things for them to do, achievement students at risk, EL students, socioeconomically disadvantaged, students below proficient tests, CST tests, students with special needs. And I thought, wait a minute. These aren't the areas that just the staff deal with. The entire school, the administration, the counselors, and the EL. So that in the future would be something to keep in mind, that we're including everybody at the site as part of the site council then. In terms of establishing these goals.
As part of the staff, right.
Okay, yes. Thank you.
Mrs. Andreen.
I would be grateful if Mr. Zotovich is still here. There he is back there. If you could help me, Pete, to understand goal number 5, how students are directly involved in the school improvement process. I think that's fantastic to have the students involved in it, but how does that work?
And we were very concerned about our male students not being successful and choosing not to be successful. So through many hours of conversation, students and parents came up with the idea of one of our school improvement plan goals being written by students with the idea of students being able to put a plan in place that hopefully would focus them better than what we're being focused now. So we're in the process now of organizing that team where there's been quite a few debates on possibly what that's going to look like. But we're looking for a representative group of students on campus, and we've talked a lot about how we're going to pick that representative group. Maybe a few out of ASB, but mostly 95% out of just the general population of the school, and then have a conversation with them about where our next step is, and then help them, have them help us formulate what our next step is, and then start to work with kids on developing, or students to develop a really good plan that we can implement next year. So that's kind of our idea. We're hoping to see the actual plan the students write next year.
That's fantastic. I applaud the school for taking that on.
And then, Mr. Burnett, I just would ask you that I myself spent a long time. I was young when I started. 6, 7, 8 years on-site counsel at Baywood School. Mm-hmm. And I remember working on these goals year after year and how much work went into them. And, you know, there was participation with staff and parents. But we were working in isolation as a school. And I'm wondering if, since there's...
suited to all sites, but certainly as principals, we share our goals with each other as well. We have... our district Title I advisory committee with representatives from our Title I schools who share their goals in a sub-meeting with Damien. So we have opportunities to share amongst ourselves.
Great. Thank you. Mrs. Dickinson.
Maybe when our high school representative could share kind of what's happening in that process when they do their little reports. A board meeting just sounds like a good process.
Okay, would one of the people who pulled this like to move approval? Okay, moved by Dr. Millar and seconded by Mrs. Botwin. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, that passes. The advanced agenda. Does anyone have an item they'd like to propose for advanced agenda?
You know, I took notes on the last advanced agenda, things that we talked about putting it on here, and there's nothing on here. And I can't remember what we talked about that I was taking notes on the last time. Title line was one of them, okay, and there were two other things.
Do you have your notes?
Do we have, from the last meeting, do we have any notes on that, Kim? I hate to see a clean slate here.
I did not record your minutes at the last meeting, and in reading through the minutes that Ilsa did prepare for you, the Title IX item...
up one, and it was not met with a desire to put it on the agenda. It was about the Avila situation, so maybe that was the third.
Oh, okay, so that could have been it. So then, good, we do have something left, and Title IX is done, so that's good.
Okay, Dr. Valentine. You're on the next item? Okay, we're moving to reports by board members and administrators. Your mic's down. You want to go?
Thank you. I just wanted to report to the board the progress towards the appointment for the vacancy of Dr. Olker. And I'd share that. We have some potential candidates in the audience, and there may be some that watch. County Office of Education confirmed receipt of Dr. Olker's resignation letter effective November 14th. Our advertisement for the vacancy has been appearing in the legal section of the Tribune and will run for the week of October 27th through November 2nd, which would be tomorrow. The deadline for applications is 2 p.m. on November the 9th. And we will schedule with the board president and clerk to affirm the applicant's eligibility and notify the eligible applicants of the interview date of November 15th. The board has copies of interview questions, and any kind of input that you would like to share is welcomed with us. The board is scheduled to make the appointment on November 15th, and the appointee will be sworn in at that time and take office. The board meeting is scheduled to begin open session at 6 p.m., which is an hour. Hopes that the new appointee can join us. We have reserved a spot at the CSBA conference, including registration in the new board member workshop. Following the appointment, we shared that we must announce the action in the paper and advise the public of its right to challenge the appointment by petitioning for a special election. To be successful, the petition must contain a number of valid signatures equal to 1.5% of the voters registered in the last board election. And with that said, Dr. Olker's resignation is effective November 14th. This board session for appointment will be November 15th, but I would like to invite Dr. Olker to attend formally the November 15th meeting so that we might appropriately say thank you and farewell.
Yes, Mr. Millar.
I just wanted to comment that I've reviewed the questions from the last interviews. I have no idea what I was blabbering about my problems with the questions. At that one meeting, I thought they were fine.
Mrs. Baldwin.
Are we on reports still?
Yes.
Okay. Somebody hasn't said adjourn yet, so I thought, good, we're still viable. I went to the Personnel Commission meeting on Wednesday, and I must say, they do a splendid job. We were out of there in like 35 minutes, and they did everything. Homework had been done, and discussion, and voting, and sadness, too. When John Spadafor mentioned to them that he was thinking of applying for the board position, there was some rather, and I was sad, too, because I was thinking, half the time I go there is fun because of the position that will be there, and I hope whoever it is, they do as well as they have done in the past because they've done a splendid job for us, for our people, for the staff, for everybody, and an exquisite job.
Mrs. Dickinson.
Did you want to respond more directly to what she was saying?
I just wanted to say that the school board is so supportive of teachers, and we're going to be calling some of us next Sunday night with the teachers on the political calls. And Monday, for all you political activists out there, the teachers and the firemen and the police and the nurses are all getting together in a big demonstration, I guess you might say, with their signs on the corner in front of the firehouse of Broad and Santa Barbara, and also on Foothill and Santa Rosa, and there's some third location. But I just think it's a great solidarity of all these people that work so hard for, in a service occupations, working together. And I hope everyone does vote and support the teachers and the firefighters and the policemen and the nurses.
Mr. Unger?
Just a couple of things, kind of following on what Mrs. Dickinson said. I would just remind people that I believe it's this Thursday night, although few of us will be invited to it, that Dr. Julian Crocker, our County Superintendent of Schools and State Superintendent of Public Education, Jack O'Connell, will be discussing the ballot propositions with Governor Schwarzenegger. And I'm sure that Dr. Crocker is in school, which I think is very exciting, and hopefully they'll be joining Monarch Grove as one of our coastal representatives in that vaulted arena. And in addition, I understand there were a lot of our elementary schools that are going to look at applying toward Distinguished School this year, and that's very exciting as well. It's a great deal of work and effort, but it's a great honor.
Well, no, not quite yet. Not to trivialize the board reports, but I had a great time at the Baywood School Carnival since the last board meeting, and they have redone everything. There was a huge effort that went into it this year. I haven't gone for several years, but all new backdrops, all new games. There were tons of parent participation. It was a very fun evening, and I'm a sucker for an auction, and they had a fabulous auction as well. So that was a fun thing to do.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Mrs. Andrews.
Speaking of auctions, I don't know what got into me, but I spent $60 on a mask of the Three Stooges at the Teach thing. Anyway, it was fun. The Teach Banquet was terrific. And I also wanted to say that on Sunday, as Adrian mentioned, there's a group of us making phone calls at the Teachers Association office in Los Osos, and we still have room for one more. So if anyone wants to come out Sunday night at 5:30, let me know.
Yeah, and I just wanted to again talk a little bit about the Teach Foundation's fundraising dinner last week. And Dr. Valentine spoke, and were you curly? Is that what the middle one is curly? Was it Mo?
I'm the smart one. I'm Mo, just like Jack O'Connell.
And another not really very bright move, Dr. Valentine offered to roast State Superintendent Jack O'Connell. So, Mr. Miller, would you please let us know if the state funds dry up? You know, if we're not getting our checks. Yeah,
he threatened an audit. You know.
Do I get to move to adjourn? Move to adjourn.